good morning. Already in this session, we've heard some interesting talks about how soils can change over time morphologically, but also showing up in the literature over the past decade or so are studies that show chemical changes in soils over time, determined primarily by sampling the soils and then coming back years later and resampling them again. And it's demonstrated its usefulness and provides some very interesting data. However, there are a number of issues associated with this. Things can go wrong. There has to be consistency in sampling methods, consistency in laboratory analysis methods, the way the soils are stored, if they're archived, and so forth. Promote and improve the consistency of this type of process, identifying changes in soil chemistry. We put together sort of an ad hoc group that we called the Northeastern Soil Monitoring Cooperative a few years back. Our overlying goal is to regionally characterize soil change through the application of effective soil monitoring techniques. A number of us had been involved in soil studies in forests of the Northeast going back a couple decades, and a lot of us saved our soil samples, and now we have the opportunity to go back and reanalyze them, and we realized that it's not always that straightforward. But any event, I think the idea for the cooperative came out of a collaboration with some Russian scientists, actually at the Dakhachaev Soil Institute in St. Petersburg. They'd been collecting and archiving their soil samples going back into the 1800s. This is just a shot of the Soil Museum. And the way they did it is quite unique, and they're still doing it this way. They actually take what they refer to as soil monoliths, an intact section of the profile that they then store and is available for chemical analysis and also to evaluate the morphology of the soil. Then you can go back out and resample and also take a subsample of that archived monolith at depth and come up with some fairly interesting results. I just want to show one example of the sorts of data we were able to come up with through this method. This actually shows soil samples collected 1926, 1964, and 2001, exchangeable calcium concentration across the top, just going down in depth. And you can see there's been quite a distinctive change in exchangeable calcium going from 1926 to 64. And then interestingly enough, the exchangeable concentrations of calcium didn't change much from 64 to 2001. But in any event, just an example that this type of method can be very useful for seeing these sorts of changes. Just a little background information on the cooperative. We had our first workshop back in March 2007. We've had two since then, and we're planning another one this coming March 2010. We've had participants from a variety of institutions, academic, federal institutions. We also have participation from some Canadian colleagues as well. It's a fairly informal group consisting of a steering committee and some task groups that work on specific projects. The current task groups are dealing with soil archiving, what's the best approach, and what are the soil, or excuse me, what are the storage effects. What I didn't include here is perhaps an even bigger issue regarding soil archiving, and that is where are the soils being stored in terms of permanency. A lot of us have soils in bags stored in the back of our labs or whatever, and that works fine as long as you're there, but things can happen. People retire and move and so forth, and the soils are often lost, and we've heard a lot of stories about that. So setting up some sort of soil archiving that provides the protection, long-term protection for the soils is important, but not always easy to come up with. But laboratory QA is very important. Methods change over time and need to be consistent if you're going to be detecting real changes in soils rather than just changes in the methods, the chemical methods. Another activity that we've been involved in that's been moving along fairly slowly, but we should be getting a draft in journal submission soon, a review paper just going over the literature on soil monitoring in North America. There is really quite a bit out there, and by summarizing it and getting out, we will help promote this concept. We have a couple of projects, small projects, that have sprung out of the Soil Monitoring Cooperative, and we hope that more will develop in the future. The first, and these projects are actually very integrated, but the first is an assessment of repeated soil sampling as a monitoring tool. Members of the cooperative had soils available that they had sampled in the past from a variety of different types of sites, sampled different ways, in most cases not sampled with the idea that they would be resampled again. So we sort of pooled our resources to evaluate how successful this can be in resampling sites in Ontario, Quebec, all over the Northeast, over different periods of time, sampled initially different ways from periods of 12 to 23 years. So we're in the process of that. We've done some of the sampling, and we'll probably get some results out here within the next year or so. But in concert with this, we're also developing a regional online soil database. And this is a repository for the data generated for these types of studies that can go into this online database. It's publicly accessible, but also what to do with the soil samples themselves. We are looking into actually making good progress in establishing connection with a museum, the New York State Museum. They are interested in the long-term preservation of the soil that's not used for analysis. And this information will also be included into the database so that people can access these soils through the museum, and if they have a study where they want to resample as well. So address our overall goal of assessing soil change in our northeastern forest soils. I just wanted to finish up by showing an example of some of this work. And again, this was a study done in 1992-93 where soil samples were collected in red spruce stands across the Northeast, looking at the effects of acid rain on spruce decline. And at that time, 92-93, we really hadn't given a thought of going back and resampling these sites, but through the foresight of Mark David, I think he's sitting here somewhere, he saved the samples. And so, you know, as time goes on, hey, we should go back and resample these sites and see if things have changed. So we've done that with six of these sites so far, and I'm just going to show you a sampling of the data. I don't have time to get into a lot of details and analysis and so forth, but some results that are somewhat surprising, perhaps. This is pH and calcium chloride for these six different sites across the Northeast. The black bar is 92-93, the gray bar is 2002-2003, and you can see that in, let's see, one, two, three, four of the sites, we actually have a increase in pH in 2002-2003 relative to the initial sampling. No statistical change here. Interestingly enough, this one site, which is in the Western Adirondacks of New York State, we actually have a significant decrease in pH. And going along with that, I should point out this is the OA horizon. These are spruce forests with a very well-developed surface organic layer, and these organic OA horizons were quite thick in all these sites. But here's total carbon, which consistent with what we saw in the pH, but also perhaps somewhat surprising, statistically significant decreases in total carbon concentrations. One, two, three of the sites, same relationship here, not statistically significant. And then over here at this site, we actually have an increase in the total carbon concentration. Statistics indicate that there's a change, but there could be a number of different explanations for these differences. Collections in 92-93 and 2002-2003 were made by the same project team following the same methods. So the idea is that the actual sampling of the soils in the field was consistent between the two times. The samples in 92, 93 were archived, so they were available for reanalysis. So not only were we able to reanalyze the initial samples and the new samples that were collected, we were able to evaluate if there were any storage effects over time. So this provided a good opportunity. However, is this a real change? And this is really at the crux of this method. We have to rule out artifactual problems that could imply that the soils are changing when they're not. Three of the big ones that jump out here, I'll just go over quickly. Storage effects on the archive samples. We did have both sets of samples, so we were able to essentially rule that out. Inconsistencies in laboratory analyses, also because we were able to analyze both the originals and the new samples in the same laboratory. We were able to do that consistently, and then comparing with the original data, more or less rule out storage effects and this laboratory issue. But then this third question, sampling at different levels in the profile. In other words, was the sampling in both periods done consistently? In the OA horizon, for example, if you sample a little deeper, perhaps getting close to that border with the mineral horizon, you could affect your carbon concentration very easily. I don't think that's what happened. I'm just going to give you one example here. We have some other data, but these are the reason I'm pointing this up is to point out these are the sorts of issues that we have to deal with. The going out and resampling soils over time can be very useful, but there's a number of different issues that you have to address to make sure that you understand what you're measuring and so forth. But anyway, just an example why we don't think that there was an inconsistency in the depth of sampling. This is OA horizon exchangeable calcium concentrations plotted on the vertical axis for the six sites. And there's quite a bit of variability, but we don't see, with the exception of this one site where the calcium concentrations actually went up, we don't see any statistically significant differences. If we were starting to mix in a little bit of mineral material in these particular soils, they were all spodosols, that should have been reflected in a fairly clear decrease in exchangeable calcium concentrations. A few other aspects of the chemistry also in the OE horizon above the OA suggest that there wasn't a sampling inconsistency. But again, the point of all this is you need to sample in a way so you can evaluate these possible artifacts that can be introduced. So with that, I'm just going to stop and let people know that we are interested in participation from anyone. We do have a website with some information on there, and you can contact me at this email address, and I can get you on our mailing list, or you can just visit the website. And if anybody has any interest or information, don't hesitate to contact me. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.